Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and this broadcast is coming to you on the 20th of June, 2011. My name's Hereward Fenton. This is a show that's dedicated to getting to the bottom of a lot of issues that are misrepresented in the mainstream, that are subject to propaganda, that are subject to distortions, and subjects that relate to an ongoing, unfolding kind of struggle in the world between the forces of basic human freedom and basic human dignity against what I would call the age-old tyrannical forces that would seek to control, subjugate, and enslave us. And we find with this show that the issue of telling the truth is one which the would-be oligarchy has always had difficulty with, because in order to keep the masses enslaved, it's always been necessary to tell them fairy tales. However, with the evolution of the kind of technology that we've got now, with kind of communication technology that's bringing you this show tonight, for example, it's becoming increasingly difficult for those would-be rulers to rule us. And a very interesting, I think, kind of challenge and response is developing as we become more informed, as we start to inform others and build up our own networks. While at the same time, you find the traditional grip of government and media tries to deal with that by increasing various levels of restrictions on and our freedoms and increasing forms of manipulation of how we think. So it's a pretty interesting field to be working in. I feel like sometimes feel really honored to be doing this, but at other times it feels honestly like we barely make any difference. And all the support that we've had over the past couple of years from listeners has been really important. You know, without that, without some feedback to tell you that what you're doing is worthwhile, this is actually virtually impossible to do. And it's also financially difficult to do. And we have been working under pretty difficult circumstances. I recently moved to a better location where I've got a dedicated studio, which is making it a lot easier for me to do this. We are going to start trying to monetize what we do, and that's going to be an essential thing in order to move Truth News Australia forward. But there'll be more on that coming up in future shows. We're going to be getting back into a regular program of shows, and really looking forward to the stuff that we're going to be bringing you.
Propaganda, disinformation, misinformation, deception, deceit, spin, untruths, half-truths, lies. You know the truth. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia. www.truthnews.com.au.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to kick straight into the show tonight. I have an interview lined up with Bronwyn Hancock, who is the director of the Vaccination Information Service, a Sydney-based organisation which is providing help to people who are trying to understand more about vaccines and their problems, trying to avoid legal complications of not having children vaccinated. And she's constantly busy with just an amazing amount of interest from people all over the country. and probably around the world who are interested in this subject, because there's been such a problem with vaccines over many years, but it's really becoming clearer now with some of the scandals that have happened over the last few years, and particularly like in the last year, there's been such an uproar over the flu shots, which have been causing seizures in small children, that the number of people who've actually got the flu shot has declined dramatically. And people like Bronwyn are just doing an amazing service to humanity. Bronwyn, welcome back to Truth News.
Thank you, Harold.
You've been on our show before a couple of times, and you know we've been through the topic, and we're probably going to go through it many more times because, of course, each time I do one of these shows, there's always new people who know nothing about this. Now, some of the people who listen to our show don't even understand the issues. We get into a lot of different topics, a lot of political topics, a lot of peace, war-related topics. And some people are aware of some things and not aware of other things. It's our unfortunate sort of duty sometimes to actually inform people about a lot of other things that they might not have realized are a problem. But, you know, we want to fix the problem. We want to, first of all, educate, we want to inform, and then we want to move forward to help fix the problems. Now, Bronwyn, you were recently involved in a 60 Minutes expose on the anti-vaccine movement, and I use that term sarcastically. It was a horrendous piece of shocking, crude propaganda that I honestly found very, very offensive. And I'm open to people having a debate on this. I'm open to seeing people discuss this from both sides, and I think that would be fantastic. But of course, the 60 Minutes episode didn't even give us a chance to look at both sides, because it began with this very aggressive position, and then it just pushed that all the way through.
That's correct, yes. Even the title was reflective of bias, because it was called Getting the Point, and the main meaning of that title was clearly they're trying to talk about non-vaccinators or those of us who try to alert people to the, like us who try to alert people to the dangers and the ineffectiveness of vaccines, is supposedly getting the point that our message apparently leads to children dying of diseases like whooping cough. But of course, nothing can be further from the truth, and they failed to provide evidence of such. It was plenty of emotion, but no evidence.
Of course, and you know, we're going to play the whole thing, and we're actually going to stop it and comment on it. Mm. And you've got a lot of knowledge based on research and in-depth technical stuff. I've got a lot of understanding of the propaganda techniques that are being used, and you may think, oh, most people can see through that. Actually, a lot of people can't. A lot of people, when they watch 60 Minutes, they think maybe they're being fluffed around a bit, but they don't realize the extent to which shows like 60 Minutes, I mean, they'll do a couple of fluff pieces that are just harmless, and probably, you know, directly after this, there'll be something that's relatively harmless. But they inject very deliberate propaganda into their episodes as well. And the people who are watching it, I feel like the average television viewer is like a victim, you know? They're sitting there and they just don't understand what's going on, do they? Do you find that?
Well, I mean, think the intellectual capacity of viewers would vary greatly.
Greatly, indeed.
But the thing is, it's when you're constantly hit, repeat time and time again with the same propaganda, then even the most intelligent of people, are going to be susceptible to it, because it just gets rammed into the subconscious, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
we all grew up with the taught this dogma that vaccines supposedly save the world from diseases, and that includes myself. And when I started receiving information to the contrary, it took me a while for myself to have all the questions answered, so that the myths that the false myths that have been in my mind were gradually debunked and shown not to be true.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it takes time. It takes a lot of questions. It takes a lot of thinking, research before you get to that point when we've been so inundated with all these false assumptions to start with.
It does. Mm. I mean, it's such a vast topic. And, of course, vaccines go back hundreds of years now. And there's all these, different phases of it, haven't they?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I mean, a couple of hundred years if you look at the smallpox vaccine. But I think very importantly in relation to that timing, what we keep getting told is that vaccines caused a dramatic decline in these diseases. In fact, that's the first thing that was stated in this segment, was that completely incorrect statements that vaccines have caused a decline in diseases such as measles and mumps and whooping cough and whatever. In reality, these diseases have virtually disappeared by the time the vaccines were introduced.
That's such an important point.
So they put the timing totally the wrong way around.
It's such an important point.
That's what we keep getting told over and over again. And so people believe it because they don't check the fears.
Yeah, I want to address that as we as we get into this 60 Minutes episode. But actually, just before we do that, I just would like it if you could summarize the latest stuff over the last year with the flu vaccines, and what's your perspective on that, and what's your perspective on the current mood of people in relation to getting the flu vaccine and the problems that have been with it, because that's the most current issue that some people are going to be aware of. What's a summary of the problems with the flu vaccines and where? What's your sense of what the general public is thinking about it at present?
Yeah, the general public.
Maybe that's a little too broad.
I guess I'm
just aware of the fact that there has been a lot of skepticism around. I know that the government denies it, but I see it among people I meet.
What I can tell you in respect to that is that the doctors themselves, I mean, this is one of the most telling things, is when you look into the surveys of the uptake of vaccines amongst doctors themselves, and when they did a survey in relation to the swine flu vaccine, this is published in Australian Doctor, I think it was, or the World Medical Journal, I think it was Australian Doctor magazine, that of those doctors who'd made a decision whether or not they were going to have the vaccine, which was about 75% of them, by far the majority had decided that they weren't going to have it. Only a minority had decided they would. And if we extrapolate that to the rest, I think, 46% had decided that they wouldn't. And then of the remaining, so about a quarter hadn't made a decision and the other quarter had decided they would. So overall, you could see a very significant tendency towards refusal.
Now, when was this survey done?
2000, I don't have it right in front of me.
Right.
I believe it was around the time that the swine flu was in the media a lot. So I think it was around 2009.
2000, fairly recently. Okay, within the last two or 3 years. And so that's quite extraordinary, isn't it? So we're saying doctors, the most informed people of all, on such a scale, are not getting specifically the swine flu vaccine, or was it vaccines?
Oh, no, it's not just the swine
flu
vaccine.
Right.
Whenever they do these surveys, they time and time again, they find that that more doctors are refusing than accepting the vaccine. Time and time again. Like there was a research done in published in the JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, where at a hospital they were trying to get all the employees of the hospital to get rubella vaccines. And And the ones that were they found to be susceptible, they put them in a lecture room, told them how important it was to have a vaccine, and they had a vaccination team out,
wow.
Outside ready to jab them when they came out. And and they still had trouble getting them to take up the vaccine. And of all the employees, the ones that refused the vaccines the most were the doctors, and then further amongst the doctors, the ones that refused the most were obstetricians and gynecologists, and then next was a rich, about 11% took it up. And then the next was paediatricians.
Right.
So.
Okay.
So by far the majority refused the vaccine, and the main reason they gave was fear of adverse effects.
So it's just really important to keep this in your mind, and everyone listening, because when you listen to the 60 Minutes piece we're about to play, you'll get the impression that the people who don't want vaccines are just some fringe element of society, some abnormal, aberrant, probably unemployed, probably, you know, just wacky people who aren't really you know, good, solid citizens like you and me. That's always been the propaganda line that they've run. And it's completely false, okay? And this is not a scientific argument. This is a factual, you know, this is fact, okay? This is based on studies, surveys, demographics. There is no disputing it. So why do they do that? Well, it's the age-old thing. The propaganda has to bring in the average person to think that, and the average person has to be brought into line. The average person has to be herded into doing what big government and big pharma and the corporate oligarchy want them to do, to consume, to buy their products, and to potentially poison themselves, because that's the way things have been and that's the way they want them to continue. But that's not the way we want to continue. We don't want to be poisoned, and we are the informed public, just like those doctors you mentioned, the people who listen to this show, the people who are listening to alternative media, turning to alternative information. They are the informed people, and that's where we're headed, I believe. So enough of me. Look, let's start rolling this audio. And Bronwyn, if you want to pause it at any moment, just let me know. I may pause it to make a couple of comments of my own.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we are rolling.
They were the original superbugs, mumps, measles, polio and rubella. Thanks to modern immunisation, we don't see these diseases much anymore. So most of us have no first-hand knowledge of how dangerous they can be. Maybe that's why so many parents are questioning...
Sure, go ahead.
relates to, as I said before, that's how they started the show. They said that because of vaccines that we don't have a problem with them anymore, whereas in reality the deaths were virtually zero by the time they introduced the vaccines. What else do you say there?
Can you actually elaborate on that a little in terms of, is that across the board? I mean, are we saying that, say take polio. Polio is the one that's most often brought up. What was the polio incidence of polio up to the point of the introduction of the first polio vaccine, for example?
Polio is a very interesting story to it because actually, even on a Four Corners program, would you believe, on the television, they had a whole program on it a number of years ago where they said that polio was referred to as a 20th century disease. And that should make people think, why should polio be a 20th century disease? Well, the reality is that polio is provoked, and this is documented, of course, in medical research. Polio is provoked by intramuscular injections and particularly vaccines. So intramuscular injections and foreign codeines, foreign material is going to have a sensitizing effect on the immune system, a derailing effect. When what's injected is itself also particularly toxic, you know, including immune system sensitizers, then obviously that's going to be augmented further. So polio, ironically, is provoked by vaccines, and they even use terms in medical research, such as vaccine-induced poliomyelitis, provocation by poliomyelitis, etc. And the first recorded epidemic of polio, I mean, it did occur on occasions before this, because at this time was not the first time we've ever had intramuscular injections, but the first time we had intramuscular injections on a major scale was in the late 19th century, with, of course, when they started the mass smallpox vaccines. And lo and behold, that's when we had our first recorded epidemic of polio. When I say polio, I mean paralytic polio.
That is fascinating.
Well, there's controversy as to whether the whether this virus is thought of to cause paralytic polio is actually the cause. But if we assume that is the case, that virus is a very common one. It's been around for as long as eternity, but it doesn't normally cause any problem, not even any symptoms usually. And even the government admits that in its own booklets in reference to polio. They say for every case of paralytic polio, there are, hundreds of cases of asymptomatic cases where you don't even get symptoms, okay? So it is normally easy for the body to deal with, but of course it's painted to be something frightening and deadly, because that's how you get people to do what you want, is you frighten them. And of course you misinform at the same time, so that the fear combined with bad information causes people to act in such a way that's not in their own best interest.
So just repeating the key point there.
Wants them to act.
The key point that you made is that the incidence of polio actually increased in the late 19th century, and that's a verifiable fact.
That's when the problem started. That's why it's called a 20th century disease. Okay.
Right.
And they were theorising in this program as to why it is a 20th century disease, and thought, well, maybe you actually get less polio when you have worse sanitation problems, so they were coming up with these theories. So it's certainly, there wasn't any dispute that it's 20th century disease. Now, and then, of course, what is well publicised of all the polio epidemics is the one that peaked in, around 1950-52.
Yeah.
And the incidence death rates from polio actually dropped dramatically after that time, and by the time it got to 1955-56 here in Australia, from that time around 50-52 it had dropped dramatically.
Right.
And so that was before the introduction of the polio vaccine.
So when was the first polio vaccine introduced?
56 here in Australia.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And the death rate actually, that year was introduced, the death rate actually went up a little.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it had dramatically declined by the time they used the vaccine. And it declined in other countries around the world that didn't even use the vaccine, the polio vaccine. So, pharmaceutical companies, no matter how clever they might like to portray themselves to be, they haven't introduced... they haven't invented time machines.
And Bronwyn, this is all verifiable with accepted medical statistics. I mean, because what people are going to say, some people who listen to you are going to say, well, she's just making that up. But they can verify this themselves, correct?
Oh,
they can find
what
you're saying is acknowledged medical facts, not just your opinion. Is that fair enough to say?
Well, it's a statistical fact. Look up the figures available from the Australian Bureau of Statistics and do the research, and they will find these figures. It's still there in black and white.
Excellent. Okay, look, I'll just keep rolling because we've got a bit more to get through here, so we'll start rolling again.
Can I actually mention something else too?
Yeah, sure.
In relation to that, because it is an important point, and it is something that's the first thing that we said in the interview with Dr. Scheibner specifically, when the first question that was asked She asked a question about her view on immunisation, and of course Dr. Schreiber immediately said, that she doesn't use the word immunisation because vaccines don't immunise. Immunise means that they protect or prevent diseases, but vaccines are well documented too, and for those reasons I said before, you know, the injection process and the ingredients, they actually sensitise the immune system. So they actually have the opposite from the desired effect. And this has been observed by researchers, you know, time and time again. And in fact, one of those researchers, Dr. Charles Richet, 100 years ago, he actually won a Nobel Prize for his research where he observed this very thing with these injections of foreign protein material, and he was expecting it to have an immunising effect. I can't remember what the pathogen was. I should check that again. But anyway, he was expecting it to have an immunising effect, and he found it had to have a sensitising effect. And so it was actually he that coined the word anaphylaxis, which means the opposite of prophylaxis, or phylaxis, which means, so the phylaxis, or, you know, more, so prophylaxis means prevention.
Yeah.
So he coined the word anaphylaxis to mean the opposite. So, you know, there he is. He's won a Nobel Prize, and anyone can look this up on the internet, Dr. Charles Richet, R-I-C-H-E-T, and Nobel Prize, and you read about the research that he did, and that led to this Nobel Prize. So there he actually won this prize for observing this very phenomenon that we try to educate the public about.
And of course,
but of course
become...
it's been hidden all these years, and of course other researchers have observed the same thing, but it never is publicised.
It's become such a big thing too, anaphylactic shock, hasn't it? I mean, it's become a big problem,
you know,
that's well known now.
You say anaphylactic shock, but the word has been sort of distorted, so that these days when people hear the word anaphylaxis, they only think of the extreme form of anaphylaxis.
And they generally think of someone who's allergic to peanuts or something.
Yes. Well, this is where people have been very highly sensitised, you see. So what people experience as a result of vaccines is just varying levels of sensitisation, or to use another word for exactly the same thing, anaphylaxis. So it can be very mild level, in which it's the effect is not noticeable or barely noticeable, or right through the range to the very extreme effect where you get such an effect as that, such as so that you only need to, you know, have a whiff of something like the peanuts and you...
Well, I was having lunch with a friend recently who has this sensitivity, and she was sitting next to someone who was having pad Thai, which has small amounts of peanuts in it, and she couldn't sit next to that person because of that exact problem you just described.
But you see, the thing is that what people need to be aware of is that this is all just different levels of the same thing. So if a child has a vaccine and they might get a little irritable or something, or they might just get something on the, you know, a sore or pain at the injection site. I mean, even that pain injection site, it's not extreme form of anaphylaxis, obviously, but it is a mild form of anaphylaxis.
Right.
And so it's all different levels and manifestations of the same thing, anaphylaxis. So it's not necessarily going to make you, you know, fall over in a coma, but it is still the same thing. It's still the same kind of trend. It's just different degrees of the same trend appearing in different people, and what causes it to be different in different people is the fact that we're all different genetically is one reason, and another reason is that we vary, even one person will vary from time to time in their susceptibility, you know, particularly if, for example, you might be dealing with an infection, and you might be dealing with it asymptomatically. You might even not show any symptoms because you're dealing with it that easily, but you're dealing with an infection.
Sure.
And so if you, you know, so that might make you more susceptible, then you have different batches of vaccines Some are more toxic than others. In fact, the drug companies even have a term for the more most toxic lot. They call it a hot lot. Documentation where they have still, despite testing a batch and finding it to be what they term a hot lot, still releasing it to the public and giving directions that it be widely distributed, which I suppose one can only presume to mean because they want to avoid clustering of damage in a few areas, which of course, when you get that clustering, that then implicates the vaccine. So it's more, they're more vulnerable legally.
Sure.
So unfortunately, this is the ethics behind the companies that we're dealing with.
Can we just pause it there? Yes. I just got to take a quick break, and then I just want to keep rolling the audio. I want to yes. keep commenting okay. On the specific points made in this audio. So
okay.
Short break, and we'll get back onto the audio.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a song by Joan Baez. Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around.
Good evening, thank you. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world. Ain't gonna let the administration turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let the administration turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world. Ain't gonna let no first strike policy turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let no first strike policy turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world. Ain't gonna let Indira Gandhi turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let Indira Gandhi, how'd she get that name? Round, keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world. Ain't gonna let that stinking Kissinger turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let that killer Kissinger turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, and turn me around, and turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Keep on singing, keep on swinging, gonna build a brand new world.
Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Hi, you're with Truth News Australia, and today I'm talking to Bronwyn Hancock, and she's talking about the 60 Minutes episode, Getting the Point, 60 Minutes on the Impact of Anti-Vaccination Lobbying, which was shown a couple of weeks ago here in Australia. Now, we've been playing a little bit of the audio. We're going to continue with the audio, and we're going to continue commenting on it.
Questioning whether vaccination is the right choice for their children. And once they tap into the bottomless pit of misinformation swirling around the internet, fears are fueled, minds are made up, and they may just say no to the needle. Well, tonight you'll meet some of the self-appointed experts behind the anti-vaccine campaigns and some grieving parents who couldn't disagree with them more.
Well, let's stop it there.
Sure, let's stop it there indeed.
Yeah. Now, of course, first of all, they talked about misinformation swirling around the internet. Well, this is an interesting point because the internet is merely an avenue by which people can communicate with each other and research. And those who wish to promote vaccines have just as much access, in fact, much more resources available to them to promote their wares.
Yes.
And provide as much information as they want, as those of us who wish to warn people of the dangers and ineffectiveness. So, if they think that our information is more convincing than theirs, well, perhaps that speaks for itself.
And of course, I mean, there, yes.
Another point is, of course, they refer to people who, those of us who said warn about dangers and effects of vaccines as self-appointed experts. Now, what constitutes an expert? And as Dr. Schardner was at pains to explain, and he's documented in Oxford English Dictionary, an expert is someone who has a great amount of knowledge on a subject. Now, what gives somebody a great amount of knowledge on a subject? And I think if someone having studied over 100,000 pages of medical research on vaccination, as Dr. Schardner has done, cannot be considered an expert, well, you have to ask the question, who can?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And she's done that over so many years.
Could you just give a quick bio on Dr. Schardner? Because I should have actually introduced her as well as part of this show, but maybe you could just quickly inform the audience about Dr. Schardner.
Well, Dr. Schardner comes from former Czechoslovakia, and she did what did she do? She did so much. She did a doctorate in natural sciences, and by the way, before she did that, she did a year of medicine, and she listed many qualifications in the 60 Minutes interview. And because the first one she just happened to just come into her mind and mention was a course in nursing, they included that and they chopped it off there, and therefore excluded the rest. The very first one after that in her list being a year of medicine. I think that's significant, very telling. So she did a year of medicine, but then she did a doctorate in natural sciences, and this is a very broad qualification because it qualifies one to do research in all the areas of natural sciences.
But you see, if I could just briefly interject there, because what I've found with the campaign against people who speak out on vaccines, it doesn't matter even if she was medically qualified, even if she was like Andrew Wakefield, deeply, part of the establishment, as soon as she would have spoken out, they would have found something to attack her on. And it's not a question of whether she's got this or that qualification. It's a question of the fact that she speaks out, they're going to attack her. And, I mean, we only got to look at what happened to Andrew Wakefield to see that they will find something against anyone who doesn't toe the line.
Well, should we talk about Wakefield now or we'll talk about it later?
Well, we'll get on to that. Yeah, we'll definitely get on to that. Yeah.
Okay. So she had all that background behind her, and then in the mid to late 80s, through meeting a man who was a biomedical engineer and developed a breathing monitor for babies, they did research into cot death, and they were looking at studying breathing controls, and so this monitor that he developed called CotWatch monitored the volume of breathing. And when you have stress, then you have a low volume of breathing. So they found, and they weren't even looking for vaccination. That was the farthest things in their minds at the time. All they were interested in doing was seeing if they could learn more about the problems with breathing controls that was suspected to be leading to cot death. So, but they found from the time that the alarms were going off with this monitor and asking questions of the parents about the time of the alarms and what happened beforehand, time and time again, of course, they found that the timing was pointing back to the day that the babies had their shots. And so they said that any stressful event can cause the alarms to go off, and but by far the most common was the vaccines. And then there was this clustering of low volume breathing on certain critical days after the vaccines, clustering among the different babies. So this clustering was, because there was a pattern that emerged, that pattern would then show that there was a link to the day of the shots. And when they alerted the cot death researchers and paediatricians to this, and they were expecting them to be very interested in taking it in very keenly, they were surprised to find this big wall put up in front of them, and that they didn't want to listen. The moment right. this word was used, immunisation, which is like a sacred cow word, they didn't want to know about it. They didn't want parents to know that vaccines were having this effect on the babies.
Absolutely.
So for Dr. Scheibner, that was like holding a red rag in front of a bull. She thought, what's going on here? we've done this research. It's perfectly scientific. There's nothing wrong with it. And yet they're, privately they were admitting the link, but not publicly. And so that started her off researching the whole subject of vaccination at that time, the late 80s.
Right.
And she has been doing that ever since. And, of course, when she started researching it, that was when the myths that were in her own mind, as they have been in others of us as well, of course, about vaccines being, effective, were gradually, demolished. And she had vaccinated her own children, and because she had believed the dogma, as we all do.
Right, right.
So it.
Let's continue with the
research to change it. Yeah.
Let's continue with the audio. Thanks. So that's a really excellent summary there, and we'll just keep going with the audio now.
Okay.
Perfect big handsome man. His mummy was a bit mad for him.
I think so.
This was baby Kayla Smith, just 5 weeks old. He just started to smile and his parents were besotted.
Loved his bubbles.
They still can't comprehend, looking at this video, that he was dying before their eyes of whooping cough. So this is the most important bit. That's what parents should be looking for, parents of newborns. Is that what you're saying? Just that little cough?
Yeah, you wouldn't think anything of it.
No. Jay and Roslyn want people to know what happened to their son, Kalis. He was too young to be fully immunised, leaving him vulnerable to the sort of disease which plagued our grandparents and is still among us.
He was given a death sentence.
Yeah.
Someone so young was given a death sentence.
But try telling that to the anti-vaccine lobbyists, and this is what happens.
I am walking out of this because this is a farce. But how about
You put me in touch with those parents. I will ask them relevant questions to establish the whole medical history of these children, and then we shall see what they really died of.
Look, I'm just going to pause it there myself, because I just want to point out the obvious manipulative style of the way that was done. The music and the sudden shift in music and the sudden scary sound. And then, you know, this is what happens when the vaccine opponents get involved. And then they cut to obviously part of a long interview where Dr. Scheibner has become fed up with the questioning. And that's obviously what they wanted. They wanted to capture that. They wanted to get anything that would make her look bad, make her look unstable. This again is, aside from the scientific matters, this is about the manipulative editorial practice of the people who make this show. And I think it's an outrage. I think we should be outraged that this is allowed to go to air, that there is not some regulatory body bringing them into line, because it's defamatory to Dr. Scheibner, and it's insulting to the general audience, and it is actually leading people away from any form of critical reasoning in relation to these questions. And I'm really, really angry about it. I just want to make that clear. And I'm never going to give up. I'm never going to give up what I'm doing to make people aware of the outrage of these type of journalistic scumbags.
Yes, as you said, she was fed up by that stage. She was fed up because we had gone through thoroughly. We had gone through the various factors that will contribute to such problems as they described, and they just refused to listen and continued to try to portray the opposite of what we were telling them. And, she got to her end of her patience with it. And now perhaps go into those factors that we talked about.
Sure.
That are have been documented to cause infant deaths from pertussis. Okay? So if we look at it chronologically, the first factor I think we might look at is transplacentally transmitted immunity. That sounds a few big words, but mothers are in nature, mothers normally provide this passive immunity through their placenta, which protects infants from infectious diseases, or particularly these childhood diseases, in their first couple of years of life. And so that immunity is there very strongly to start off with, because the immune system is very immature to start with, so that's there to make up for that immaturity. And over the first couple of years, that transplacental immunity gradually wanes at the same time as the baby's very immature immune system gradually matures and learns to do all the different components, become specialised, know what their jobs are, learn what their jobs are, so then it's able to, by the end of a couple of years of life, able to stand on its own two feet, and that's three to get a childhood disease. Now, what is well-documented medical research is that transplacentally transmitted immunity, which the mother is supposed to pass on to the baby, is weakened or destroyed by vaccines which the mothers have had themselves when they are in the past, when they are babies and or older.
Okay.
And so this is the first problem. That in itself is going to be the first thing that's going to make an infant susceptible to whooping cough, more susceptible to whooping cough than it would have been otherwise. Okay, so that's something that's relevant before these little things even get born. Okay.
So whooping cough in three-month-olds was not a commonplace thing.
What's that?
So I just want to clarify, whooping cough in three-month-old babies was not, as they said in the time of our grandparents, a common thing.
No. Whooping cough is actually a childhood disease, and traditionally that's when it has occurred by far the most commonly. Of course, vaccines, partly because of this, vaccines as changed the age distribution so that they're now occurring far more commonly in the younger age groups at a lower age than what is...
So that's an outright lie. I mean, that's like outright misinformation or a deliberate lie. It's just factually incorrect to say that that type of thing was common.
Yes.
That's a new thing. That's a late 20th century development.
Yep, and we pointed to a graph that we had there with us because we were ready for this interview with various literature and graphs. We pointed to this graph to the interviewer that was done in relation to 372 randomly chosen Swedish children. This is done at the in 1989. And they looked at the ages at which those of them that contracted whooping cough contracted it. Now they weren't vaccinated; they weren't using vaccine then. And of course, back in the 80s, you didn't have the loss of transmissible immunity that you have today from the mothers. None of those 372 children contracted whooping cough under 1 year of age. And we pointed to that very clearly and described it and explained it to the interviewer, but she's obviously totally ignored it because it doesn't suit their agenda. So that's number one. The next thing is that these infants were born. And what do infants get these days when they're born is they get a hepatitis B vaccine. And as we explain, and as Dr. Sharman explained to the interviewer at 60 Minutes, and they did actually cover this brief bit, is that the hepatitis B vaccine, which is done as other vaccines do, weaken the immune system, the little of the immune system that's there, and therefore that in itself would also have increased susceptibility to any disease that that was around. Okay, so then you've got that. Then the next thing that comes along is the baby gets exposed to whooping cough. Now, when investigations are done, these infants contract whooping cough, when they've done the investigations, time and time again, what do they find? They find that they contracted it from fully vaccinated people. And there was an article published in the Medical Journal of Australia in 1998 where they documented the 4 infant whooping cough deaths in New South Wales between mid-96 and mid-97. And they documented there that they, all of them, where they knew the vaccination status of their siblings or mothers, they had all contracted whooping cough from their fully vaccinated sibling and or mother. So that's the next thing. So we've already established that the vaccines indirectly increase susceptibility through the loss of transmissible immunity, and then through the Hep B vaccine, because that weakens the immune system. And then, of course, vaccines increase susceptibility to the whooping cough itself, and then they get whooping cough from a fully vaccinated person. It's a real problem now that adults with good intentions, but unfortunately misinformed, by the media and many doctors, going out, getting the whooping cough vaccine, and then they give whooping cough to these young infants.
Right, so the younger brother is getting infected from the 1 or 2 year old who's just got the vaccine.
What's that?
So the younger sibling is getting infected from their older sibling
or their mother, yes, or grandparents, yes. They get it from fully vaccinated people around them. And by the way, whooping cough has been dramatically increasing in recent years, and the doctors are all scratching their heads about it because they have to admit that we have, you know, record high vaccination coverage. Yeah, particularly now with all these adults going and getting their vaccines, which they weren't before.
So a lot of adults are getting whooping cough vaccine now,
are they? Yes, that's right, because they have a whooping cough vaccine now available to adults. So now they're going out and getting it. So so there's vaccination all over the place. And what are we getting? Record high
Great.
Record of incidents of whooping cough. Now, a factor that might be playing in there is that perhaps doctors are finally realising the vaccines are not foolproof, to say the least.
Sure.
And so they're realising, because they've been told by this over and over again, and maybe they're finally getting the picture, that whooping cough does actually occur in vaccinated people. And they're actually diagnosing it correctly as whooping cough, because this has been another phenomenon in the past, and probably still does occur with other diseases and to an extent, I suppose, with whooping cough as well, is that when doctors see a disease in a person who's supposed to have been vaccinated against that disease, well, they assume that it's not that disease, because they've been taught that vaccines are effective and they think the vaccine works, and therefore it can't be the disease that it might appear to be, therefore it must be something else. And then what doesn't help with that as well is that vaccines, in their drowning effect on the immune system, can distort the symptoms that people will experience. And of course, the way doctors diagnose diseases is by reliance upon those symptoms. So if the symptoms are changed because of the derailing effect on the immune system, so you get what they call atypical forms of the diseases, like atypical measles, atypical whooping cough, atypical tetanus, then that also will disencourage them from diagnosing the disease for what it is. So, you know, these are various factors which people don't realise can affect the figures when you see figures of disease rates.
Great. Shall we continue with the audio?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so thanks.
I'm going into too much detail.
So I just want to try and get through a bit more. We are running out of time, but we want to try and get through a bit more of it.
All right.
So I'll kick off again.
At 76, Dr. Vera Scheibner is the voice of authority in the anti-vaccine movement in Australia and around the world.
It's ridiculous.
And so how many documents are in this room?
Well, it is more than 100,000 pages of medical papers.
For 26 years now, she's been writing prolifically about the dangers of vaccines.
It's a national treasure. Based on my extensive research of orthodox medical literature, I am totally against any vaccination.
Have you got anything good to say about vaccines?
No, because the immunity is achieved by going through the natural infectious diseases of childhood, such as measles, whooping cough, mumps, rubella.
So vaccines are dangerous and diseases are good.
Exactly.
I might interrupt there.
Yeah, sure.
Because they're cutting out the statements that we've made about the ineffectiveness of vaccines and making it out to be a choice between vaccinating, in which case they try to give the impression it means you don't get the disease, and getting a disease. And of course, getting a disease, they portray to be a situation like these infants dying of whooping cough despite the unnatural circumstances. So yeah, it's
absolutely
distorting the whole.
And also the way that scene was cut and shot, it looks to me as if they've taken her reply where she says yes to the interviewer saying, so diseases are good and vaccines are bad, and then cuts to Vera saying yes. I imagine there was more context to her yes than just a simple yes.
Well, yes.
I would assume that.
Obviously, there's a lot more in the interview that they've cut out, so it does give a distorted idea.
It's just a classic case of, yeah.
They go, yep, much better for these babies to be suffering badly from this awful disease than to have vaccines.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I'll continue.
Yes.
Kalis was born in February this year, a little brother for 2-year-old Shayla. He only died 7 weeks ago, and his parents are still reeling from how quickly whooping cough claimed his life and how little doctors could do about it.
Well, I might interrupt you there.
On Tuesday, he sent home.
Go ahead.
Because I think that brings us to another major factor that we also mentioned, which is management of disease. Now, she said how little doctors could do about it. Well, hey, they said it themselves. Doctors don't know what to do. Unfortunately, they don't know what to do. What they do is they apply, they administer antibiotics to these young infants with whooping cough. Now, the medical journal article in back a few, it was also published in the MJA 1998, reported increased morbidity associated with cefaclor, that's a type of antibiotic they will use in these cases, cefaclor use in children presenting to the emergency departments. And so there's a problem with the with their own treatment of how they treat the diseases because of the problems with the administration of antibiotics, and particularly if the infants are already sensitized, of course, by the hepatitis B vaccine, that'll make them more susceptible as well to the antibiotics. And
so this is part of a general problem with medicine.
Unfortunately, is documented to be a problem.
Yeah.
Now, in reality, when it comes to what has been effective, in contrast, time and time again, patients who have been in a much worse state to start with and have been about to have their life support systems turned off have been fortunate enough that on instructions from, in their case, fortunately, knowledgeable families, they have been given large doses of vitamin C and immediately and rapidly recovered. Now, there is an example of this, which was a couple of years ago, in which was been fortunately publicised on the media, in New Zealand, to a dairy farmer who was in that state. He was about to have his life support system turned off. The doctors had a meeting. They said that there was nothing they could do, and they thought the best thing for him was to let him die. Now, fortunately, a member of the family, the brother-in-law, had been using vitamin C for, himself for a while, and he said, well, you know, why don't you try giving vitamin C? And would you believe that despite the family asking the doctors to give vitamin C, and the only alternative to the doctors being to turn the life support system off, they still resisted turning off, they still resisted giving the vitamin C to that man.
Yeah, because they don't want to admit that their paradigm is wrong. I mean, that's the basic situation. They've been schooled in a way of thinking that's taken years and years out of their lives. Their whole career is built on it. And even to try it, means to accept the possibility that it might be right, and that they don't want to do that. And they've got all this pressure from Big Pharma telling them not to do that as well, because that's how the gravy train works. That's how the money gravy train works. Now, let's just continue.
Fortunately, they did eventually give the vitamin C because the family got a lawyer involved,
and they finally did.
Immediately started recovering.
Great. Now, that's another...
He was driving around on his farm again.
That's another really important topic. Yeah. Let's just continue here with the...
management of disease is also very important. So, you know, we must wonder if the babies were given vitamin C, whether they would be still with their families today.
Sure. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left to get through some of this audio, so let's just continue.
With a cold, and on Friday, he's on life support.
Yeah. Shock. Every mother's worst nightmare, I think.
And they had 15, 20 doctors around him just screaming recess, and it was all on.
I think people are thinking this is a normal cold, like a bad cold. But it's not, it's a disease, you know. Look up the word disease in the dictionary, I think.
It's not so much the dictionary you need to consult, but the history books.
The recent paralysis epidemic in South Australia brought most of the affected children to the wards of the Adelaide Children's Hospital.
Vaccine.
Just a quick update on that one, Bronwyn. Do you know when that particular newsreel footage was filmed and what they mean by the recent paralytic epidemic? Would that have been early 50s?
Yeah, that would be the early 50s, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great, thanks.
Vaccines have virtually wiped out polio, measles and mumps in Australia. They're so rare, today's doctors would struggle to diagnose them.
So if a little kid turns up with measles in the waiting room out there, it's a surprise.
That's right. And it's something that a lot of people just haven't seen.
And yet, half a century on, Professor Peter McIntyre from the Children's Hospital at Westmead still has to argue the benefits of parents giving their kids the jab.
Now, I'll just re-emphasise again, Bronwyn, you've pointed out the fact that these diseases were already in steep decline before the vaccines were introduced. So again, we've got blatant misinformation there, which really it's the responsibility of the journalists who wrote the script to understand the facts. They either don't understand the facts or they're lying. I tend to think they've got people above them telling them what to do, and they're not even doing the minimum amount of research to clarify it. But I do think that people like the doctor there, they referenced, he to me seems to be someone who is deliberately lying. Shall we just continue with a little bit of that? We'll hear the rest of him speaking, and I'll get your comments on that.
Yeah, okay.
We're not immunising to protect children against trivial diseases. We're immunising them to protect them against diseases which can have very serious impacts. And if we stop immunising, they can very quickly come back.
What are the risks if a parent chooses not to vaccinate a child?
As a parent, deciding not to immunise your child, from the child's point of view, is you playing Russian roulette with their life.
So, Dr. McIntyre is taking the typical classic hard line. No doubt about it. No mistakes. And I think a little bit further on in the interview, he says something like, if there ever were mistakes, we would deal with it straight away. We wouldn't, we would be open and transparent. And I'm not going to have time to get into the rest of it. But that, of course, is completely untrue, because we've seen with the recent flu reactions that they were not open and transparent. There has been no disclosure, and they didn't even stop administering it. They only lifted the age to 5, but they're still giving it to small children, and they haven't admitted that there's a big problem. And everyone else knows that there's a big problem. I mean, the informed public now know there's a big problem.
Okay.
Hello, you there? I had a bit of a break there. Are you still with us?
Yeah. Had a problem with the battery on my phone.
Oh, no problem, yeah.
Okay. We're saying it's administering the...
So I was just pointing out that that Dr. McIntyre there is taking a very black and white position, and he's saying that that it's absolutely clear that your kids must have all these vaccines, and then later on in the interview, where I think she asks him, should you basically admit and be transparent about any problems that do exist with vaccines, he said we would if there were, but he doesn't admit that there are problems. There is absolute mountain of documented evidence of problems within the last couple of years only, which is very clear with the flu vaccines, but he doesn't even admit that, you see. That's the point I'm making. We've got all the other problems going back many years with the MMR vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is, he says, we would address it and we would be open and transparent if there were issues. And yet there are issues and they're not open and transparent.
Well, you have to wonder what he's doing all day. Is he supposed to be researching all this? Because it's all there in front of him.
Well, it appears to me that the man is deliberately misleading us. Mm. That's the impression I get. And, we can sort of excuse an uneducated hack journalist, although I don't think they should be excused, but you can sort of say, well, they weren't intending to deceive. They were just being misled. But with someone like this, the guy has to know better. It's his job. It's his profession.
Yes, that's right. Well, and interestingly, he uses terms which we use in relation to vaccination and natural immunity. He uses them the wrong way around. He used the term Russian roulette. Now, obviously, if you go around, injecting poisons into a child, And you don't know what the damage is going to be to that child or adult because of these various unpredictable factors. Isn't that what Russian roulette is? We have such a lack of control after you inject those poisons. They're there to go and do whatever they want to the body, and it's very hard to control that. That's Russian roulette. But when it comes to diseases, infectious diseases, our bodies have been dealing with these for centuries. Hundreds of thousands of years, and they know how to deal with them. And provided we have sufficient nourishment, and we don't do the wrong thing when we have the disease, so we allow it to go through its course and support it properly with its nourishment and not being interfered with. The immune system is something that is reliable, is predictable. It does know how to deal with them and is quite capable of doing so. So, that's where we have control and security in nature, and an immune system which is developed over eons to be able to do its job. Unlike this new invention of injecting these poisons into people, that's where you get the unpredictability and the insecurity of what on earth is going to happen as a result. So, he just does it the totally wrong way around. In fact, in a debate some years ago on vaccination, he described vaccination as a natural process. And the audience just reacted.
Really?
They gasped and thought, what?
A natural process.
How can you say such a thing about vaccines being natural? You inject, injecting all this material directly into the body. I mean, when does that happen in nature? he says those things running around. He talks about if we don't vaccinate, disease is quickly coming back. Well, diseases, whooping cough is just sailing through the roof with a record high vaccination coverage, so it's now higher than it was, a greater problem than it was when we didn't even have the vaccination.
Bronwyn, we're just about out of time.
Yeah, okay.
Mm. Look, it's just been so dense. We've only got through about a third of that audio.
Okay, well, we can do the rest later.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good to actually engage with all of the points, and I think it's just been really fascinating what you've done. You've gone into such depth about each point. Let's get you back on, and we want to continue with this.
Yeah, and then later we can talk about the benefits of diseases when they're, of course, properly managed and occur at the right age, etc.
Yeah, no,
that's something else that's well documented.
That's for sure.
And people need to know that that vaccinations are not required for school, and if a school tries to tell them that, don't believe them.
Absolutely, and I'm quite keen to get Dr. Scheibner on the show. Ongoing, and we will get there. I know we've made progress with this. I know the zeitgeist is changing. At the moment, our disadvantage is the corporate oligarchy controls the mainstream media. They control the airwaves. They control the television. They do not control the internet, and they do not control the zeitgeist. And we can retake it. And we're at this threshold where we are almost poised to do that. And this type of thing, what we've seen with 60 Minutes, will just collapse. And the people responsible for it will run away like rats from a sinking ship.
Well, truth has power, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Mm. So looking forward to getting you back on again. Have a great have a great week, and talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much, Harold.
Thanks. Well, there we have it. That was Bronwyn Hancock, and a show that I found pretty stimulating. Want to continue to get the message out. Please tell everyone what you know, and always remember with this these questions about the vaccines, don't get dragged into the peripheral debates. Don't get dragged into things that are just your opinion. There are so many solid statistical facts that you don't need to argue the finer points when you've got these clear facts. Because what I often find in these types of debates, if you're not an expert, that will always be used against you. I'm not saying I have to, disbelieve that vaccines work. I'm just keen to find out, but everything that I've learned has made me extremely wary of vaccines, more and more to the point where I've decided I don't need them. But I'm very keen to have the debate continue and have people who've got viewpoints that differ to come together and debate it. And I'm hoping that we can actually get that on this show. I'd like to see a real debate with an honest expert and someone who can present the medical lobby's position on it, debating in a civil way with someone who is a vaccine skeptic. So stay tuned for that. And that's another show from Truth News Australia. We'll be back very soon with another show. See you then.